This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to the April 5th, 2021 For Your Benefit radio show. We're here today with Dr. Ray Kirk, and Ray is going to talk about financial literacy, kick off the month, right? Because April is Financial Literacy Month. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Bob. How are you today?
Well, I'm good, and I got my notepad out, and I'm going to take notes and probably use them on the webinars. I was going to say in class, but we don't do too many in class anymore, do we, Ray?
No, it's all webinars. I've kind of gotten into the swing of that.
Yeah. So I know this is a passion for this because we've known each other for a significant amount of time, but some of the listeners might not know. What caught your eye with this to say, you know, I'm going to know this and I'm going to preach it along with your substantial duties at OPM? What was the bell that rang that said, I'm going to follow this?
Well, I spent decades at OPM working in the retirement area, administering the federal retirement program and providing information, developing and providing information to agencies and employees about the retirement system. One of the focus for many years had been, now here's the rules of the federal retirement system, and then just leaving people adrift, and particularly under CERS, that worked pretty well because there weren't many decisions that a CERS employee could make. But once we came into the FERS era, the Federal Employees Retirement System, back in the mid-80s, where employees then had to start making decisions about their retirement throughout their career. Because the TSP, which was created as part of the FERS system, it requires an employee to take an active role in getting ready for retirement, effectively starting on their first day of working. Because they have to decide how much am I going to contribute to TSP, how am I going to manage those TSP accounts. Because their TSP account, when they get around to retiring, is a really significant piece of the overall retirement program. So that caused us to kind of expand our focus at OPM to come up with ways to help employees think a little bit more about that long-range planning, which then led into just understanding the basics of financial planning, financial literacy. And then that was kind of spurred in the late 80s that Congress, when they made some amendments to the TSP plan, tasked OPM specifically with developing a financial literacy, effectively. They used, of course, gobbledygook to describe it, but essentially some financial literacy guidelines for all agencies. That became actually a mission for OPM to do it and gave the agencies responsibility. So my involvement just kind of grew from that point.
So somebody gets handed this responsibility. I won't say handed. They earned it, and there was a push, thank goodness, because it helped NITP too, not only NITP, but others as well. How initially was it received? Was it like, yeah, I'm going to give this a shot, and others say, well, you know, it's just more of stuff I don't understand. But I firmly believe that after the initial period, people would talk about it and then catch the ear of somebody else. Well, did you know? Do you understand this or that? And there was a groundswell, I think, for the benefit of the worker, if you will. Certainly, you know, the contractors like us, we benefited from it nicely in the sense that we were doing a lot of seminars. And now, they can't get enough of the information, and it's very easily accessible both on the net as well as on the air. So When do you, was there a trigger point where you say, this is working, this is what I wanted? It, you know, maybe it was right away, but I would think not, but correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, I think initially there was, I was called indifference toward it, and that was because when we first started making our efforts at OPM, the vast majority of employees were covered by SERS, the old retirement system. No, I really didn't think they needed to know much about that because SERS is pretty much an autopilot retirement. So as we got more and more FERS employees, the new employees began, and they start being faced with making decisions about the particular TSP and in the broader context. So I think it's been kind of growing, and now that, of course, the vast majority of employees are covered by FERS, that people start, employees see this as an important element to have an understanding of managing the money. And then again, part of our focus at OPM, we try to broaden the focus that it's not just TSP. It's the overall fitting, overall picture of your financial situation, which includes not only investments, but managing things like insurance programs, that you have adequate coverage for insurance and budgeting, and those basic elements of financial literacy.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And again, my view from not within the federal government. I mean, that's all NITP does is work with federal employees. But I do remember that the initial response to FERS is, well, if it's so, if it's good, why did they give it to us? We don't have the same guarantee that the CSRSers did. And I think for a good few years, there was that feeling, and then people started to see the, the opportunities that they had to manage the money, and I think there were, not to talk about TSP millionaires, because there's a nice number of them, but far and away the bulk of the people are not, but they had this new retirement system that maybe didn't give them the guarantee that the annuity was, but there was almost no ceiling on the ability to invest it. How long did it take for people? Now, you were aware of what could be done here, but, the groundswell, was it 2 years into it, 5 years into it? And I think today people look at it and say, boy, I'm glad I'm FERS.
Well, I think you're too optimistic with that 5 years. I'd say it probably took a decade before we got kind of a turning point. And as I mentioned earlier, that kind of lined up with as the percentage of employees that were covered by FERS and just became more and more critical to their planning, that you had more and more interest develop.
Yeah, and were they... I guess the initial period where people started to say, well, this is not so bad, I need to know a little bit more about it. The demand then was, I'm sure, at the TSP's level, who does, just outstanding work with regards to the literacy part way back when this first started, as well as today. And then, there's radio shows like this. We don't sell anything other than information. And there are people that... want to help the federal pre-retiree, but I think today isn't some. Shouldn't we have some attention to this after we get our first paycheck? And somebody younger says, "I got a lot of time to make up for what I don't do now." I'm not saying that's the bulk, but when we would teach the classes, they'd say, I'm in this class, but this really doesn't have that much application to later on, where others were saying, boy, if I catch this train early, I'm going to get a nice ride.
Well, I mean, it's a mixed response. I mean, we're talking about people, say, in their 20s, that I have two children who are in that age range. And, when they started their jobs after where they graduated from college, I don't think really high on their list was what should I be doing with the retirement options, the 401k options at my employer, the equivalent to the TSP. You know, because I exerted a lot of parental influence, let's say. You know, they do make substantial contributions to the 401k, but I think they're indicative that any new graduates, so whether they're going to the private sector or become federal employees, there really isn't high on their list of things to do. Maybe they have student loans they're paying off. I don't see that, you know, there's a financial saving in making financial investments. And then your long-term future is going to be, you know, it gets here before you know it. So they try to, when I was at OPM and as our work through NITP, we try to kind of stir that enthusiasm, that understanding about making some good decisions in your 20s is going to really pay off for you in your 50s and beyond.
And the time value of money, I think, is hard for many to understand. How were you able to get that across to the folks without using, like, you know, future value invested at 6% or something? Something has to click with them to say, maybe this is more money coming out of my paycheck than what I'm comfortable with, but the reward is not immediate. It's at the end of the midway through and at the end of the term, if you will, employment.
I think it kind of the attention got helped by the boom in the stock market in the 90s. You know, people looked at that, and they looked at the TSP balances, or they just looked at the rate of returns at TSP, and that really, people said, my God, you know, look at all that money I could be making there. So it kind of was fortuitous that the stock market cooperated during that early time frame when you need to convince people that it was a good idea. But, you know, and now we're looking at the long-term record at TSP. You said that the TSP millionaires, people who just are consistently investing, that the TSP funds have been good to them because the overall stock market has been good to them.
Yeah, and I'd imagine the discussion now isn't so much why, it's, you know, how long is this going to last? And I think TSP is somewhat built not to be distressed proof, but it has more weight in things, or less weight in things that would have a market hiccup that would impact them adversely. So if we were to look at the funds, you know, take a look at the G fund, I suppose the G fund is the fund for all seasons, no risk, and now some would say no imagination, and I don't mean that in a negative way. The G fund is set at interest rate, so it isn't that the TSP set the interest rate, it's the marketplace for all funds. And sometimes I believe people have a hard time with it. You know, my friend got this, or, you know, the bank down the street is offering 1% more. And then others would say, well, if you're interested, don't have all your money in the G fund, move it out. So I'm going to pretend I'm one of your students, and I'm going to say, when do I know when it's time to get out of the G fund and go into the others? I know there is no time, but how do you talk to somebody that thought, well, you know, all I have to do is wait, and then I'll know when to get it. If you wait, it might pass you by.
Yeah, the only, there's no argument per se. The only thing is to show people the past experience. Of course, you know, we can't guarantee the future is going to be that way, but long-term experience, and you look at the returns on investments, that being in stocks, a mix of stocks and bonds, and is going in the long run going to give you a better outcome than just being getting the basic interest rate, just the G fund, which is paying government securities into the average of government securities. So you're staying even with inflation, but it's just about impossible to get much ahead of inflation. So if you want to have resources in retirement, you know, you got to expand your horizons on that. And it's just showing people the past experience. Again, I think the kind of the convention on the media hype or discussion about how good the stock market does, it just helps people convince people that well, maybe we'll give this a look. Maybe we'll experiment with it. I think the TSP life cycle funds are a kind of entryway that people feel safe because it gives them a mix, a predetermined mix that you don't have to make decisions yourself. You just say, I'm going to put my money in the various life cycle depending on my target date for starting to access the money. And there's a built-in investment strategy. And the TSP website gives you lots of details on that, shows you how it changes over time. I think that helps build confidence in people that be a little more optimistic or a little more adventuresome than just keeping all your money in the G fund.
Okay. We understand now it's a time for a break. And it's important to listen to this break because the good folks at WAIPA are the ones that sponsored the show. And we got nothing to sell here other than information, but they have an outstanding product. But let's let them tell you all about it.
Over 46,000 feds choose WAIPA to be there for their life's biggest moments. Group term life insurance is a smart option if you're looking for coverage that'll help meet your changing needs. At WAIPA, eligible employees can apply for up to $1.5 million in life insurance regardless of salary. We also offer other coverage options such as group, short-term disability insurance, or a chronic illness rider. WAIPA has been serving civilian federal employees for over 75 years. Get life insurance on your terms. Visit waepa.org for more information.
WAIPA helps provide coverage today that will protect your tomorrow. Group term life insurance coverage is important to have while building your future. Whether you're saving to buy your first home, starting your first federal job, or beginning a family, establish your WAIPA policy now, and you can carry it with you into retirement. WAIPA has been ensuring the future of civilian federal employees for more than 75 years. Find coverage that fits your future by visiting waepa.org today.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today talking about financial literacy. And who better to lead us in that than Ray Kirk? Ray is former OPM I'll call you OPM executive, but he has an outstanding grasp on financial literacy and has been a proponent of that. Hello, we've probably known each other 30 years?
Probably in that neighborhood.
Yeah, and I remember going to OPM used to have these conferences, and Ray would be there and talk to the people as well, and now we're talking to the folks on the other end of the line. And it's another thing to mention that next week, and once a year, we get somebody from OPM, just not somebody. We get Kim Weaver. She's the Director of External Affairs. And joining her this year is Jim Courtney, and he is the Director of the Office of Communications and Education, Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board. So, you know, Ray's going to blaze the trail, and they're going to come in and finish it up next week. So, Ray, what would you say was your greatest success? Not that we're trying to say you were successful, but you were successful in having people pay more attention to financial literacy and the impact of it, especially the first folks. How long did it take?
Well, as we were talking earlier, it probably was a decade before things really got off the ground. Part of that was overcoming the momentum in agencies, because they, within agencies in the HR world, view their traditional role of just explaining the benefits. You know, and they were very cautious about the charges that they were providing and financial advice and telling people what to do. So it's kind of coming up with how to keep on this the line where you're providing information and the range of information to provide, but not making suggestions to people that this is what you have to do. So that took a while to get over that initial inertia to just keep explaining the rules, but not the impact of the rules. It's, so I mentioned earlier, I think probably a decade or so before we start really making some progress in getting the agency enthusiasm. You know, and you mentioned the conferences that we used, that OPM has. They still have them now. They're virtual for the last couple of years. But part of the focus of the conference, which is for HR benefits people, is to have them understand the kind of the broad mission, and that not only understanding the details of the benefits programs, but also to understand the why and the impact of these benefits programs on their employees.
Yeah, that's good. Another observation I've had, and it's been a while, the people in the class, we're used to, our primary retirement seminar was a pre-retirement seminar, and so the people there were way closer to retirement than the younger people, and then I noticed there was younger people coming in, and they're nice, so I would ask, I said, why are you coming this early? And they go, well, you know, we talk at work, and we feel sometimes that the people closer to retirement at this point don't really have a grasp on the time value of money, et cetera. So we want to know about it now rather than know about it 5 or 10 years away from being retired. So the financial literacy part, when people hear that or see that, they're going to take it different ways. But every class is different. You know, some people are going to have a better hold on the finances. They're going to have, the time value of money, I think, is driving force here. So maybe I ought to take a detour off of what I was talking about. What would you say is financial literacy? It's not an insult to somebody to say they're not financially literate. They might take it like that, but that's not what we're there for.
You know, I think the basic definition is just having the knowledge and skills to make informed financial decisions. So an important element of that, as you've mentioned, is understanding the time value of money and that it works two ways. That usually when people talk about compounding interest and one of the great discoveries, if you will, using discoveries very loosely, but from an investment point of view, as you put money in some kind of savings vehicle or investment, and over time, because of the compounding of interest, it gets grows at an exponential rate. One of the other sides of it that I try to emphasize to people is that compound interest is your enemy when it comes to having a debt. That just as the you make an investment, then your earnings and your total investment grows at an exponential rate. If you have a debt and you're don't pay off your credit cards, then the interest is growing at an exponential rate, and you're getting more and more in debt. So that the time value of money works both ways. That if it's your investment, it's a good thing. If you owe a debt, then it's a bad thing.
And then let's apply that to the ability to borrow money from one's thrift. So. You can take a thrift loan out. You pay it back over a certain period of time, not a particularly long period of time. But that's maybe akin to if you're out barbecuing or something and you take the hot embers out and put them someplace. In other words, you want that money in there, even if you were to borrow at some modest rate. I'm not suggesting at crazy rates like 10 or 15% interest. But you might find one in today's world that's a little bit more than the others. It might be 4 or 5%. I'm not giving any financial advice here, but think about, you know, before you would take money out of the thrift rather than take a loan outside of the thrift. It seems to me I'd rather have if I have to have a loan, I'm going to probably want a thrift loan. Although I am giving up opportunity. I think they call that, right, the opportunity cost?
Right. Another side of that, though, there is the reducing the balance in your TSP account, so your the opportunity for the compounding of your investment is reduced because there's just a smaller base to be working on. But the other kind of hidden side of that is if somebody's repaying a TSP loan, they're probably not putting new money into TSP. So the money that they had been contributing to TSP is now going toward paying off that TSP loan. So not only have you kind of backed up your TSP balance, but you're not refreshing it. You're just getting the illusion of refreshing it because you're paying back the loan. But say you pay it back over 5 years, it essentially gets you back to where you started 5 years ago. So you lost that 5 years of earnings on your TSP.
Well put. And again, the seminars that we do, we see more and more younger folks in a pre-retirement class. And that's really nice to see because they can pick up the financial buzzwords and they can understand the power position of their investments within the thrift. And the thrift is ever forever looking at different ways to do things for less money. And then listen to next week's show. Anybody listening to today's show should do themselves a favor and listen to next week's show as well. So you got Ray up, first in and first out, and then the TSP folks. So it's a powerful lineup for the next 2 weeks. And again, nobody's selling anything here. It's all advice to help people to do better. I also believe I've read where the TSP was maybe neck and neck with some other investment. I forget whether it was Vanguard or whatnot, is like the most two powerful funds out there. And here you go, you've got the ability to do this as a federal employee. I was a federal employee for a millisecond, and I didn't have any time to put money in the TSP. There was nothing wrong with being a federal employee. It was just that I thought I'd find a better opportunity outside. My dad was a federal worker, and he goes, "You made a mistake, son. You made a mistake." And, at the end of the day, I think I didn't hurt myself or didn't help myself that much choosing where I wanted to go. But if I had to do it all over again, I think I would have stayed in the federal sector, knowing what was coming. So, and again, in your classes, we tend not to do all pre-retirement. Pre-retirement could be at any age. What surprises you with some of the questions that come out of the class at both levels, at the basic level, and then you might get a question from somebody that's really good managing the money, and they'd ask a question that you might have thought, I read an article about that a while ago, but it just doesn't come up. So what might some of those things be?
Well, I get to start with the younger employees first. I mean, we talk about TSP, and I mean, they get, at least they've heard the terms, they've got some general knowledge, and we could talk about the time value of money, those principles. What I've found increasingly, and it became really crystallized in my mind with the experience of my two children who don't work for the federal government, but they're in their mid-20s, that the same kind of problem is when it came to making insurance decisions. Part of that financial planning is they might have understood the principles of investing, but they really didn't have any idea how to make their practical application to what impact does my health insurance, and how do I compare one health insurance plan to the next one, and essentially the how well insured you are to give you the flexibility and the freedom to make some of those financial investments. So I think that's a big gap that we have in financial education, is kind of those making practical decisions about what should I be doing, not just saving my money, but what should I be doing with my everyday expenses or my benefit selections.
Okay, and I'm making choices with regards to the benefit selections, but what happens, somebody makes their best choice today, after listening to the show, of course, but of course listening to others as well, and I'm going to not place my bets, but this is the way I'm going to structure my portfolio. But the portfolio, as best I understand, shouldn't necessarily be ironclad in the proportion that money's invested from day one. There's some give and take. You can't time the market. But I've heard some financial planners say, you know, if you've done really well, take a piece off and don't put it in the G fund necessarily, but put it in something safe. Or others would say, you know, ride with the vehicle that brought you. How do you address either one of those two? I'm going to just leave it in, good, bad, or otherwise, or I'm going to take a piece out, and then I'm going to come back in, which is near impossible to time the market when to come back in. But how do you get to that person?
Well, of course, as you mentioned, first principle is you can't time the market. So you just have so you should try to think of what your long-term goals are, and come up with a strategy, what might be the best way to achieve them. But they're going to change over time, and the strategies change over time, too. If you're 25 years old and you're going to be retiring at age 60, you have, let me do a quick math here, 35 years now for your investment. So if the stock market drops by 400 points one day, and that's not going to make much difference over the 35-year lifespan of your investments. But if you're planning to retire next month, you know, if the stock market suddenly has, well, these days 400 points isn't very much, but, you know, has a 10% drop, then it might be, you know, have a feeling of panic. So you do have to reevaluate the goals, your goals and ways to reach those goals. And as I mentioned earlier, that's what the life cycle funds do in TSP. So it's one of the ways that, and it has this built-in strategy. And I think one of the great things that TSP has done is for all of their life cycle funds, they lay out the long-term strategy. So they show you what the investment mix, say it's a fund that's scheduled to mature in 2040. You know, so they'll show you for the first 5 years, this is the mix of investments. You know, and then the next 5 years from it's going to shift. A different profile to kind of meet your long-term goals. So the people can, the TSP gives you the flexibility to balance your account, make intra-fund transfers to rebalance your account to move from one fund to the next. You can do it on a daily basis. That probably isn't the most sensible way to do it, but you have the flexibility to do it. The life cycle funds kind of have that mechanism built in, so you don't have to keep making decisions. You can look at the plan that's been laid out, and if that makes sense to you, then you go with that plan. If you have decide that your long-term goals have changed, then maybe you want to reevaluate your mix of investments.
I think I'm sure everybody's taking notes, so we'll give them their hands or their recorders a break here, and then we can listen to what NITP can do for the listeners.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
All righty, welcome back to the final portion of today's show, talking about the TSP, investing, financial literacy, and the like, with Ray Kirk, Dr. Ray Kirk, former OPM, but with a passion for financial literacy. And we've talked about a lot of different things. Is there any pet thought process or investment strategy that we'd want to open up now, Ray? I'm not a great investor. I'm very nice, but I'm very impatient. You know, if I make an investment in the morning, it should triple by noon, and if it dropped by 50%, you still sell. And So I have other people help me with that.
Well, I guess we could use you as an example of what not to do.
It's often. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, the investments, particularly the TSP, we're talking about retirement investments, that's for the long haul. You shouldn't be focused on what's happening on a day-to-day basis unless you're planning to retire in a couple of days. Then it might make a difference. But as I mentioned earlier, if you're planning to retire in another 20, 30 years, then you should look at the long-term effects of your investments and not let the day-to-day fluctuations force you into making quick decisions. And you think about all those people that sold off their investments, whether it's transferring the TSP accounts from the C fund into the G funds, the C funds invested in stocks into the G fund. When the stock market dropped at the time frame again, 4 or 5 years ago, and then the market suddenly took off, and they tried to catch in. So they kind of followed the bad strategy of selling high and selling low and buying
the other way around. Yeah,
they sell when the market drops, and then they buy in when the market's back doing better. It's kind of be an optimist. Look at the long haul.
Yeah, I listen to, of course, the financial planners that come on the show, and again, this is I believe what you're saying as well. You don't set it and forget it, but you watch it. But if you purchase or you invest here, and it has a bad month, it has a bad 6 months, that doesn't mean you pull off and pull the money out and then put it into another fund or another form of investment that maybe hasn't gone through that structure. Because, all these different funds have a profile of where they're invested. Now, it's not a roadmap to say, well, this worked for the last 10 years, it's going to work the same for the next 10 years. It's not. But we need to understand that. And I'm not so sure everybody does. I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ray, I would say a lot of the people are set it and forget it folks, but they're slowing down in numbers. The numbers say, no, here, judiciously cut back, prune it, fertilize it, and let it grow.
I hope that's the strategy. Maybe next week when you have the experts from the Thrift Board on, they have some statistics about, how much movement there is within funds or people making within fund transfers, that how they react to events. But I think there's a big tendency, at least my impression in talking to many, many federal employees over the years, is that there's a big tendency to kind of set it and forget it. That they come up with an initial strategy, and they pretty much stick with it.
Right. So let's look at it this way, because you talk to so many people and the like, and again, you're not a financial planner buying and selling anything or suggesting. It would be an overall comment. Do you ever get pushback in a particular class and you're saying, well, you should consider this or that, and maybe three or four of them go, oh, no, that's too risky or it's too boring. I'm sure you get both. And how do you talk to a person that just doesn't want to let go of the safest G fund, maybe a little bit of something else? How do you get through to that person and say, you got some time left, and time is on your side as far as investing goes? How does the bell finally ring for that person?
Well, I'm not sure how you get it to finally ring. What I do encourage people that are kind of facing or in that situation is maybe to experiment a little bit. To move a small piece of your TSP investment into another fund. If you have everything in the G fund, then maybe move 10% into the C fund, and that kind of 6 months, see how those two funds are doing. And if you're still so build a comfort level slowly, as opposed to saying, well, you don't want to get it. You want to get everything out of the G fund. Just switch it over to something else. That would make more sense, because they kind of have to feel comfortable with that decision. So doing it in baby steps is kind of a starting point that I often suggest.
So it's not a wholesale move. I'm going to move some out, and maybe I'm going to put some over and you know the fund that has the most, not risk, but the most reward. But sometimes it comes with a potential drop. But it doesn't have to all go that. These aren't wholesale moves. You might take a piece and put it here, another piece here, another piece here. So you have it in three different pots rather than just put it all in one and then move it and put it all in another, because it really is the law of averages. The law of averages is probably in our favor. We have people that email us questions each week, and I've got one here, and let me read it, and then we can comment on it. What is your guest's thoughts of the TSP income fund in order to protect one's assets? It's a general question, but this emailer is very, very good at asking questions and us being able to use them.
Well, again, it's a question I think you might want to bring up again next week when you have the TSP experts there. But from my perspective, and like you, not a financial planner, but having just lots of experience with employees and understanding their benefits, is it depends on your goals. The income fund is designed to be conservative, to be focused on serving the principal, but generating I'll call it interest income, but income for it. So that's appropriate when you're retired or near retirement, and you're interested in supplementing your pension, your FERS pension, and having additional income. When you're 25 years old, that's probably not the best strategy, because then you're looking for the long-term growth. So it's not a one, you know, here's the answer that's always the right answer. It depends on what your specific goal is. That's probably going to depend on where you are in your life cycle. New employee, kind of mid-career employee, on the cusp of retiring, or maybe even have already retired.
That's sound info. So why don't we take each one of the funds and talk about, let's start with the G fund. The G fund is attractive because it's a better interest rate than you're going to get most any other place. But it's an interest rate. You know, it's an interest rate that rises and sometimes and falls in other times. And it's not like watching a seismograph machine. It probably has a little. It's probably had a little variation, but it's going to travel in longer paths up and pretty much, I would say, also on the way down. So if we were looking at that fund. Let's take each one of the three categories: new employee, mid-career, and pre-retirement. What does the G fund offer those people?
Well, the G fund offers the, as it's been said, it never has a losing debt. No, it's just paying interest, so your principal is never going to get reduced. But it goes up because it's based on the overall average of government security interest rates. It is going to go up very, very slowly. So, as I mentioned earlier, effectively, it's tracking the inflation rate. A little bit of a premium above inflation, but you're not going to make long-term gains. Your money's going to essentially stay with its purchasing value. So that's probably, if you're early in your career, that's don't want to put the bulk of your investment there. If you're late in your career or already retired, then that might be appropriate because you're worried about losing your principal, and that becomes a real big problem if you don't have any time to recover. You can't make new investments into TSP once you're retired, and you need the money. So I kind of, over time, it might become more and more attractive, but early in your career, probably not so.
Okay. And then let's take a look at the F fund. And I think F stands kind of like for fixed investments.
Right. I believe that's probably the logic behind that.
So these are like bonds, and I suppose there's some CDs in there.
Purchases, right. There are both private sector, government sector bonds. So it's again, tracking kind of not just the government securities interest rates, but it's tracking the private commercial sector interest rates, which tend, of course, to be higher than the government rates. But interest rates fluctuate, and the value of those investments of a bond, which is the investment tool, is going to fluctuate as interest rates go up and down. And kind of an important point is that jumping a little bit ahead to like the C fund, the stock fund, that often they go in opposite directions. That when the stock,
right.
Stock market is booming, you know, it's not interest rates tend not to be as high, but if interest rates suddenly go up, and some of those bonds that were purchased paying a lower interest rate are going to lose some of their face value. You know, it gets a little complicated in explaining it, but it's probably an investment strategy. You don't want to just zero in on one fund, that you have to look at the long-term trends of the others, because all investments don't move, as you mentioned earlier, don't move at the same rate. They have cycles, peaks and valleys, and you want to look at something to keep those kind of even out those peaks and valleys, not have everything in one fund where it hits a valley and you've got a big loss. Hopefully you have some money invested in one of the other funds where it's on its way up and the F fund is on its way down.
Yeah. What inhabits the I fund?
That's the income fund that you're.
Yeah,
well, that's
yeah.
going to be a mix primarily of the F fund, the fixed securities, and the G fund. So the focus there is on getting income, and they're trying to be able to stabilize it. So the G fund essentially stabilizes, since it can never lose money, stabilizes some of that potential downside of the value of the F fund, but you're still generating some income no matter what's going on.
Okay, good. Because if you just look at the letter, and sometimes people don't gravitate towards what's in there, C fund, F fund, S fund, I fund. And they have, don't they have funds within a fund where let's say you're going to retire in X years, and they have a fund for that time period for that person, not that person individually, but with the number of federal employees, they're all going to fit into one of these, if you will, profiles. So you go, okay, I understand the L, that's long term. And F is fixed, and et cetera. But when they put them all together, there's a term for that where there's a mix, and it says if you got a 10-year time frame, this is what you want to look at. If you got a 20-year time frame, this is what you want to look at. And so that might help people to get away from a decision-making standpoint, because you're investing money in a predetermined mix.
Right. Those are the funds I've been referring to as the life cycle funds and TSP. They're the L funds or life cycle, and they have different maturities, not exactly the right word. They have different target dates. So somebody who might be planning to retire soon, let's say get my date straight, it's 2021. So you might invest, put your money in the L 2025 fund. And the idea there is, it gets closer and closer to that target date, it becomes more and more an income-focused fund. If you're planning to retire in 30 years, then you put money in the L 2050 fund, and that's going to be more focused on the growth. So on the C and F and I funds, which are more growth oriented and probably have a pretty small piece of the fund on that income side, because you're trying to get a big baseline so that when you shift over to being focused on income, you have as much money as possible to earn the income on it.
Okay, and then as so we've got these defined, and people can change within, but it shouldn't be the proverbial knee-jerk reaction to it. If you put money into X fund, whatever the fund letter is, and somewhat quickly after that things didn't go as planned, that's not the time to pull it out. There's, I guess, an old adage, what goes down comes up, and what goes up comes down. Maybe in different magnitudes, but they're all not guaranteed to go one way. And listening to shows like this, and certainly there are some other shows, and plus the TSP, I mean, the information that's on that website, I don't know that I've seen that on any other site for employees to, you know, outside the federal sector. It's a 401k plan, or a self-employed person has ways to put money away for retirement. So everybody's got this, and it's not everybody, but most everybody's got these opportunities, and we don't want to talk about everybody else. We just want to talk about the federal employee. Okay, the ever efficient Andrew says, you got 2 minutes. So, Ray, final words?
Well, I think rather than focusing on someone when they hear the term financial literacy, you know, you're saying there's a bunch of rules I have to learn, it's got to focus on the aspect of improving your decision making. How do these different rules help me make a decision to reach the goals that I've set for myself? You know, most of our focus at NITP is on retirement goals, but your goals might be more short-term, and then you want to structure your financial decisions around what it takes to reach that goal.
Very, Ray, I think we'll end on an outstanding summary. Thanks for being here, and thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week with the TSP folks. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.